Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, you're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. Because it's more fun to believe.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another experience of Me and Paranormal You. This is your host, Ryan Singer. I guess I've been doing this show for 8.5 years. So if you've been listening to this program, I don't know. I guess it's still proper show etiquette to introduce myself at the beginning of every program, just in case someone is listening for the very first time. If you are listening to the very first time for this show, if you're listening to this show for the very first time, boy, do we have a treat for you. Because returning to the program, gosh, I'm looking, it has been 12/11/20 was the date of the recording, I believe. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. But we've got returning to the program triumphantly, Dash Kwiatkowski.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I always do the same thing on my podcast where there's like, because I think we both have podcasts that are very much like, you know, we're talking to the people who we're talking to, and we have an idea what it is. And I always have this moment where I'm like, ah, this would be a weird one for someone's first one, huh? Like, I have to assume, that it could be someone's first one. And I'm always like, all right, well, you did pick one. You did pick one to start, yeah. And maybe yeah. This is it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we should be doing episodes where like the music or whatever stops, and then the first words the people hear are like, so remember last week when I was telling you that death isn't real and that I went through a portal? Well, breaking news. You know, people are just like, what? I have read, you know, every once in a while I do housekeeping or whatever and see, and I did notice one time somebody, the fact that there's podcasts about podcasts now is so amazing to me, but people, you know, saying like, I don't know what this guy is talking about. It's not comedy and it's not paranormal, so what? I don't understand. And I'm just like, you nailed it, bro. You nailed it. But we've got a lot to talk about since our last conversation. I need to set a specific chime or sound for the Dash text message, because because whenever the Dash text comes in, obviously every once in a while it's just a hey, how you doing?
Hey, but, how's it going? Yeah.
But at least 50% of the time it's a, you're not going to believe this.
Yeah, you're not going to believe this crazy shit that just happened.
Yeah.
So this one, we could talk. We could start with that. This most recent texting you, I had this thing happen where a bell just shows up in the middle of my floor. And I'm like, I got to. You're like the first person that's like, I got to text Ryan about this. Like, so the bell just shows up, and at first I'm just like, ah, came up out of the floorboards, you know, during a cleaning with a little vacuum or whatever, little vacuum robot, came up out of the floorboards, easy, no problem. Because the rooms all have like a divider. So each room, like, you know what I mean? Each room has like a little bump. So like, you know, if we're going to vacuum, we got to put the thing in the different room. So it's like, had it come from this room, had to come from between the floor. And I was like, all right, that's kind of fun. It's a bell. It's whatever. But then I take, I'm like, I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, let me test this. And I pick this bell up and I try each floorboard, like each crack, baseboard crack, floorboard crack. And it is way too big to fit in any of them. And not even by like, not even by, you know, like, oh, it's almost there. Like, it's like twice the size of any of the cracks. And I'm like, that is more just seems like this thing just kind of showed up. And that's, I'm like, that's cool. That's spooky. I'm thinking about bell. It's like a playful bell. It almost feels like the bell off of like a jester's hat or a cat toy or something. So it's, you know, it's got like all the sort of, all the sort of cultural context that I would hold this bell in is very like playful, fun. And also, you know, I'm thinking about bells in terms of, you know, cleansing and energy and stuff like that. And so I post about it, and so immediately someone's like, that's from fairies. You gotta take that bell and take it into the woods and bury it and then say, I do not accept your deal. And I was like, yeah, for sure. I'm not gonna do that. Because that's wild. I won't eat it though. So don't, you know, don't stress too hard.
That's so funny
about that. But yeah, no, so I got this bell. And so the thing that you put together and I was thinking about too, is that, so the show that we went and shot since the last time I came and talked to you on here, we shot a pilot, we shot a paranormal investigation pilot, really happy with how, it's turning out. There have been some drags in editing, but that's all moving now. But the being that we went to look into was the Bell Witch. And obviously, you know, that's from the name, the Bell family, the Bell farm, but still just that little sink, you know what I mean? Like that little connection of like Bell Witch, here's a bell. I turned it into jewelry immediately. I don't know if you saw the pictures of that. I did actually. Well, let me grab it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, what's interesting too about this, while you're grabbing that, I'll kind of just expound, like, you said being too, which I really enjoy because of the so many different meanings, like being somewhere, or there is a being, or we are all just being. Also, so let's see this, the jewelry.
Yeah. So I used armature wire, and I made, so this kind of goes sant, and it also goes front and back. So I made a little loop that goes around the bell itself. And I glued that in, and then I made a little coil so that I can pretty easily, like, if I want to wear it as a charm on a bracelet, or if I want to wear it as a charm on a necklace. So it's pretty, pretty easy to take on and off. But it just felt right to put it on something that I can like carry with me. Like that was like first instinct. And I was very much like, all right, I'm going to follow this instinct. I'm going to put it on a wearable thing.
That's really cool. One of the interesting parts of the, you know, the reaction, I guess, of posting this online is, that's from fairies, you have to bury in the woods, tell them you are not accepting their deal. Now, I want to talk about that a little bit if we can, just because I don't know a ton about this. I guess I don't know a ton about deal making. And the contracts, the unspoken contracts that people maybe enter into, almost as if it's like predatory lending. You hear about that, and like, you know, like when you come down to this car lot, we approve anybody. Well, because they know they're going to repossess the car in 6 months and get a little money out of you in the meantime, because they know you can't afford it. But which is one of the weirdest business practices, by the way. Like, just I know a friend of mine not that long ago had their car repossessed, and they show up in the middle of the night, like at 4 in the morning, and just come, quote unquote, like legally steal your car. It's just such a wild thing that we're just all like, this is what happens. This is normal.
That's just the rules.
Yeah. So that's just the rules. But, so I'm curious about, first of all, we have to accept that these things are real and these contracts happen and things like that. But what I'm curious about is the idea that you can enter into a contract with a being, an elemental or an entity of some kind, without even really knowing it. And does that deal become, I guess, quote unquote, binding for a person? Yeah. I don't know what, have you looked into this? Or are you familiar with this concept at all?
Yeah, so I've been reading some, it's actually funny that the day the bell showed up was the first day I picked up this book that I had started a long time ago, and then I was like, I should finish this. It's a book about just sort of the folklore on the Fae and fairies and sort of where a lot of that folklore comes from. And I've read there's a book called Secret Commonwealth that I read a while ago. It's like a very, very old book, really, really interesting, just sort of into the lore of it. And I think one of the things that I find the most interesting about just sort of the space that Fae occupy, sort of culturally speaking, is in a lot of it, they are just sort of this catch-all explainer for anything weird that's happening. You could say like, oh, well, the Fae are doing that, you know? And I think a lot of the bargain stuff seems very tied to the, like, the don't eat the food. I don't know how much you've heard about people saying like, oh, you know, if you find food in the woods, don't eat it, because that's how they get you. That's how they take you to the fairy realm, and that's how they sort of turn you into a fairy sometimes, or they trap you. And I always like to think about, you know, what are the cultural origins of a thing like that? So, you know, don't eat food you find in the woods, even for non-magical reasons, is probably just solid advice, I think. And, you know, so I get, you know, a lot of stuff like that where I'm like, okay, why, you know, why would you not want to even look at like religious rules? Like, why wouldn't you eat this type of food? Like, oh, it's probably because at that time, that type of food was like a lot harder to eat in a sanitary way, you know, stuff like that. So don't eat the food in the woods makes sense, but it gets into this idea of bargains and deals. And one of the things about sort of fairies and lore is like their culture and their understanding is so radically different than ours that we are accepting deals or bargains that are sort of held by fairy law or fairy culture. And that's how we don't know where, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's how we don't know that we're, you know, taking a bad deal. And I think it's really interesting thinking about how, like, it's almost this, like, you know, the whole sort of, like, every accusation a confession, right? When you think about how the indigenous people here in America were sort of taken advantage of because people showed up and were like, well, these are our rules. And so when you agree to this thing, you're agreeing to our rules. And, like, in colonial sense, like, really just applied our stuff to everyone, you know what I mean? And so I almost wonder if the sort of the fear of the fairy bargain comes from this, like, this deep down fear of something more powerful doing that to us.
Wow, that's interesting. When you look at the, this is like really the fascinating, this is why, one of the reasons I love having conversations with you, because it does, like, you know, it reminds me that, you know, the reasons on the surface for something can be totally different, at least in words, than the actual practical, deep, hidden meaning for why there is a rule about something or a saying to avoid or to try to do. And oftentimes throwing on a mystical or a supernatural or a paranormal layer to something also makes it transcend through time in a way that it becomes very interesting as well as very practical. Not to say that all, you know, folklore is just, you know, telling people to wash their hands after they take a shit before they eat.
certainly not. Yeah.
But that it is interesting too, to try to understand the best we can, which I'm not even sure it's necessarily possible, at least from my point of view, to, like, I mean, because there's really no way to understand the rules and the laws of a I guess we'll say foreign culture that you're operating in all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Without having exposure to them previously, right? I mean, there's just no, there's just, unless you're like so deeply psychic, you can just walk into a place and just understand the rules of a room, right? Like going into a poker room where you're not allowed, where you've never played poker before and you don't realize you're not allowed to take your cards off the table or
totally
things like that. But so that is, that is interesting. So I guess the in this book, I'm curious if they have explanations and or I'm guessing it wasn't like a, you know, a fairy deals for dummies.
No, but. Yeah, nothing. Well, so but that's sort of the interesting thing to me is so much of it is this like, don't even engage. Like so much of the advice is just like never do a deal, never agree to a deal. And I think that's what really interests me, because I think about fairies conceptually and sort of the place that they occupy, the idea of the fae. There's so much connected to various types of marginalization that are really, really, I mean, obviously beyond the simple, you know, fairy as a slur or a pejorative way of talking about, you know, gay people, which is, I feel like, less common these days than it was, you know, however many years ago, but it's still there. There's still the sort of the connection. And I even think about like the changeling myths, the idea of a changeling, you know, the myth that someday your child is replaced by some being that acts really different and you have trouble communicating with it. And a lot of the changeling myth, a lot of the people that got accused of being changelings were neurodivergent kids who, you know, their parents would be like, oh, when they were little, they were totally different. And a lot of that is, you know, parents project a lot onto babies that don't, you know, communicate like adults because they're babies. And then when a kid grows up a little bit and they act in a way that the parent doesn't understand because, you know, understanding of, you know, neurodivergence is very low even now, sort of culturally, they're like, oh, the fae must have replaced my child. And so I think a lot about how much, like, you know, I've felt for a while, and a lot of this is sort of, I think we talked about this a little bit on the show last time, but a lot of the sort of the premise of the show, of my investigation show that I went out and shot, is this idea of sort of kinship, of marginalized kinship with the other, with the paranormal, with the you know, ultra terrestrial, with everything sort of outside of what dominant culture tells you is normal or regular. And so when I think about, I think that's one of the things, and maybe this is hubris on my part, and I wouldn't be surprised by that because I've been accused of hubris before, but there's something to this, like this blanket fear of like, you can't talk to fairies, you can't enter into a deal with fairies, you can't engage with fairies at all, that, you know, sort of reminds me of like, oh, if my kid hears that gay people or trans people exist, they're going to get societally turned into one. Do you know what I mean? Like this fear of if you talk to the dangerous other, somehow it'll infect you with its otherness. And so, you know, when I get a little bell that just seems to apparate out of nothing, and it feels very fey, it feels very other to me, that's not, you know, that's less scary and more just like, oh, this feels cool, this feels like a connection, this feels like a validation of sort of how I think about all this stuff to begin with.
Yeah, that is really cool, and it makes me curious. And there is, it is funny, I mean, earlier you mentioned, you know, you kind of like to the point where like the fae got blamed for everything almost, right? And totally. It was like, it almost reminds me of thanks Obama, you know?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Thanks fae. Then, but so when you have like through a very long period of time, you have a collection of individuals who aren't necessarily connected to one another through the physical space, but are connected to each other through experience and through the marginalization of, you know, of who they are. it kind of also reminds me of like Goldblum in Jurassic Park, where like he's life will find a way, right? It's like
totally,
it's like community, culture, and existence will find a way, right? And so it is a really big thought and a really fascinating train that runs through this thought that this whole like folklore culture of this other could be born out of a necessity for making sure these stories got passed on, even though the dominant culture said we will not give oxygen for this to be in the room.
Absolutely.
And so the most they could tolerate was the telling of a fanciful story of a creature that's mythical, or you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like in that way, it almost makes you wonder if these stories of these, like, you know, trolls and fae and other creatures that seem to be from places unknown and unexplainable aren't just totally interchangeable with, oh, someone who is gay. Or who doesn't identify with the cultural standards of what gender. And so it just makes, I mean, that's a really interesting, and I feel like that is like a whole college course program on trying to dive deep into all of that literature and everything else.
And so much of it too. And I see this in sort of in white queer circles who sort of point to and use these examples as like just to like use people. And I don't basically what I'm saying is I don't want to like point to specific cultures and be like, see here. But around the world, you know, outside of sort of Western colonialism, there are cultures from all around the world who, you know, didn't conceive of gender as binary, didn't conceive of these things as set in stone in the way that Western culture does. And even on top of that, though, would say like, oh, this person, this is a third or fourth gender. And by being that third or fourth gender, that person is sort of selected for a shamanic position or for a spiritual advising position. And pretty, you know, it's in the cultures that were, you know, outside of, you know, again, that sort of that Western gender binary. For those cultures, a lot of times people who were, you know, it's hard because I find myself in a place where I don't want to say a trans person because that's idiosyncratic, right? So that not idiosyncratic, that's anachronistic is the word I was looking for. That's anachronistic because, you know, trans refers to a very specific type of experience. But people who were outside of that binary were often in a lot of cultures treated as mystical. And so that I think even goes to your point of like, if not a direct allegory or representation of queerness or existing outside of some frame that culture sort of decided was what was, you know, normal or status quo, still even like a conduit to it, which I think is really, really fascinating for me as I you know, fall deeper and deeper into the weird stuff that I find myself falling into.
Well, let's pick up this thought.
Yeah.
After a quick break here.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, and we're back. So, I mean, what this conversation has turned into, and which I anticipated without knowing the specifics, was a, you know, a grand conversation that bridges so many different things, that brings the paranormal into, you know, the deeply personal, and yeah, also the cultural implications and the mirroring effect and the connections and the companionship we can find within stories and with each other through stories, et cetera. And it is so hard. And I say this from a very specific position of, you know, of who I grew up as and where I grew up and things like that.
Totally.
To try to keep all of these, like, the big things. And I don't think anyone expects any of us at any given time to even be doing this. But to try to, you know, be mindful, the mindfulness, right, of trying to understand some of these really big issues that are transformative and in fact should be transformative on culture here in the West.
Yeah.
You know, to be mindful of all of that and to understand the history and the origins of so many things is, no one expects us to all have that all together, have our shit together all the time. And I think that is sometimes when you find, like, you know, maybe pushback from, like, the majority of culture, which I think at the end of the day, if everyone was truly honest with themselves, the majority is not exactly what everyone thinks it is.
Totally. I super agree with that.
And the beautiful thing about the paranormal and the mystical and folklore and all these tales as well is, not only do I believe that so many of them are rooted in actual events, and truth, and understanding that the world and the universe is so much more than what we think, or what we've been taught is, I mean, because we have been taught in a very binary way about everything. Like, there's you're alive, you're dead, right? So it makes great sense to me when you're talking about the people who are operating outside of, you know, that standard binary notion of gender and other things, that these people are looked at as, you know, mystical, or I don't want to say they've ascended or evolved past it necessarily, but they're obviously operating in the liminality, which when examined from, like, a telescope from far, far away, you realize, oh, that liminal space, which we talked about in the first, and it, by the way, if you're listening, it's experience 333, which is such a great number. If you want to listen to Dash and I's first conversation, which I highly recommend. But so it makes sense that, you know, operating outside of that stringent binary gives a person access to more, and I guess different as compared to the point of view from the person who's operating within that binary.
And I think that's so much of, and it's funny because I feel like the more I think about this stuff in terms of the paranormal, which I fully agree with you that, so I think what I break it down to is I genuinely people ask, like, oh, do you believe in Bigfoot? Do you believe in UFOs? Do you believe in all this stuff? And the answer is, I don't know. Well, the thing that I believe in, that I really truly believe in, is that existence and the world and everything that we're sort of doing here is bigger and more magical than maybe even can be measured, in terms of hard practical science or whatever. I really, the thing that I believe, if I have to narrow down, like, what do you believe in? I just believe that I think there's magic out there, and I don't know what it looks like, and I don't know what shapes it takes, but it's so much, even just, you know, it's just so much more interesting. I get so confused by people who are like, there's only, it's hard science and that's it. And it's like, that's a wild thing to want so hard to commit to. Anyway, all that aside,
I just see these people with like, as being young teenagers with posters of numbers on their wall.
This is my favorite microscope.
Yeah. Anyway,
the more I get into this, I think what you said about not evolving beyond, but being different, I think that's where the key is. And I think that's how I've been trying to expand my life, both paranormal and normal. Not that any of us are living a normal life at this point, but outside of the realm of magic and stuff like that, where like I think about, and I do this a lot with social media, but I think about like, all right, I try to live as radical an existence as I can. I try to, when I have resources, I try to redistribute them to, you know, the people who need it most. Like I've got a, you know, ongoing donation for a couple of abortion networks and a couple of trans funds that I try to, you know, mutual aid and community, in my opinion, if anything's going to save us, I don't think a political party is going to save us. I think community and mutual aid are the things that are going to save us. And by us, I mean people. So I try to do that as much as I can, but I'm constantly trying to be like, all right, who are some voices that I don't really have? What's information that it's not in my, you know, in my circles, in my spheres? And a bunch of years ago, I was like, hey, you know what? I don't really know what radical Native Americans are saying right now. And I feel ignorant about this. So I just, you know, I go on Twitter and I say, let me follow some people. Let me follow some authors. Let me follow some people who are saying things that I don't know. And then it's any group. I'm thinking like, oh, I'm seeing some people talk about, please don't go to Hawaii. And I'm like, I would love to understand that. And so I follow some people on Twitter. And so I've been doing this thing where it's not about me saying like, I'm going to put my nose in every book and understand everything. But it is about me saying like, I feel ignorant about specific topics. I feel ignorant about specific people and specific groups and what they're going through and what, you know, what activists in these communities are saying. So I luckily have this very bad app called Twitter on my phone but it's crazy because it's a bad app and I don't like it, but as long as I'm on it, which I will continue to be, unfortunately, I want to use it to say like, let me widen my understanding of people who, you know, people who don't have a platform because of the way culture has sort of been structured. And I say, okay, well, let me listen to some people. And it's been really cool. And I feel like that's going to what you were saying about like, you know, people of a different gender experience or gender expression are going to have a different way of looking both at the paranormal and just at the world. And so I think that the paranormal is no different than that. You know, people are going to understand thing, you know, people are going to have like, oh, this thing happened and that reminds me of a very specific folklore from my culture, let me share it with you, or this reminds me of a specific experience that I've had in the world. And I think if we're going to try to paint some sort of full picture of mundane things or magical things, having the sort of the breadth of experience around it, having a bunch of different people with a ton of different lived experience, is at least the most interesting way to do it to me.
Wow. I mean, that's beautifully said, I think. And there's so much beauty and so much wonder in the world that exists, that walks side by side with, you know, the darkness and the tragedy of the world as well. And, you know, it reminds me of an Avett Brothers song where, what is it? Is it the dark and the light, and it's a song about death and life or something. I can't remember, but how they live together. They're like this couple.
Yeah.
And anyway, and they're in love with each other. So, and there is like so much to learn and so much to be excited about when it comes to trying to understand newness or the other. And I think that's probably at the heart of what so many people who are invested in and love the paranormal.
Absolutely.
There's a curiosity about the thing that is different than us.
Yeah.
You strike a really resonant chord there, because what people, and it's, I think you and I both can agree that it's definitely this way in comedy, where, you know, for years, Comedy Central made the general population believe that stand-up comedy was a certain thing.
Totally.
Absolutely. And when in fact it was so much more than that. And I believe, you know, the Travel Channel and Discovery or whatever, they've made people believe that investigating the paranormal is a very specific thing.
Absolutely,
And that very specific thing is a bunch of, like, you know, tough white guys going into a place talking shit
like
to ghosts.
New metal band, yeah.
Exactly. And it is so much, so much more than that. And I think the world will come to understand that. And it's really funny, because there's this great TED Talk by a guy, Kevin Kelly. And I watched it years ago. And it was, I think the title of it is called Evolution Towards, Tends Towards Specialization.
Yeah.
And he argued that through the process of evolution that everything is affected by.
Yeah.
Everything becomes more specialized. And we can see that in comedy. We can see it in music. You know, it used to be stand-up comedy. Now there's alt comedy. And now there's blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And it's just such a beautiful concept to try to understand, like, oh, okay, so everything becomes more specialized and more unique and breaks off into its own thing and becomes its own life. I mean, I guess that's what Offspring even is, right? So to think that that's happening, clearly it's happening in the world of our understanding of what paranormal is and, you know, the investigation techniques that go along with it. I'm curious about the, without getting into too many details about the pilot you shot and the project that you're working on, if there is a specific, because, you know, you and I are the same, and I think in this way that, you know, going into a paranormal project is, it's about so much more than just like, let's capture evidence on camera.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So like not a theme necessarily, but like the purpose that goes behind, that's the foundation, the, you know, of the investigation itself. And I believe we've probably touched on a little bit of it already, but I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah. So I try to, like, in terms of just like investigative methods, I really like the Estes method. I think everyone likes it right now. You know, pioneered by Connor and Carl from the, you know, who are on the Hellier crew. And I will say, just, and this is me being petty, I am finding a lot of sort of, it's very funny watching, because, you know, a lot, like you said, a lot of the ghost shows on the Discovery and the Travel are a certain way, and I realize that, and I do watch a lot of them, and it's been very funny watching each of them try to sort of introduce this method as if they've created it, which is very funny to me, just in terms of a, like, oh yeah, we're doing this thing, and this is how it works. And it's like, you could do a little work cited, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, give credit where credit's due. I mean, it's like, no one's gonna be like, what?
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, you're using a technique you didn't think of right then on the spot, or you developed. Yeah, yeah, it's.
But I really like that. I really like that method. Just, and I think there's something about, you know, and I've definitely, there's a little hill in town that I take friends to sometimes on Wednesday nights, to sort of participate in the WUFO Wednesdays that the Liminal Earth people do, where we'll just go up and we'll, you know, we'll look at some stars and we'll do our best to, you know, we'll do some tarot pulls and we'll do some Estes stuff and just, you know, kind of see what wants to talk back, which is always a lot of fun. So I love the Estes method. I think it feels like a very personal and a very sort of like, a very specific way to sort of have one person sort of act as a conduit or a connecting piece to that. So I think that's sort of my number one, just in terms of specific methodologies. In terms of the general thought process behind it, actually that one's really interesting in just thinking about like how the show started out. And so again, I don't want to, you know, for spoilers, I'm not going to get into too many specifics, but you know, we started out, you know, we're going to look for the Bell Witch, and we started out in the sort of the Adams Museum doing what I would say sort of felt like a much more traditional, like, we're going to talk to whatever's here. And the results that we got, which were pretty direct. And I had my first sort of very scary is a weird way to describe it, because scary feels like I fear for my safety. And I, at no point did I fear for my safety during this, but I had my first like very present, very negative experience with something sort of that felt metaphysical or extra normal. And it felt, as we were sort of reaching out in what felt like a sort of a traditional ghost exploratory way, I sort of realized that what we were doing was, you know, if the sort of the premise and the thought behind my show is to give a voice to the voiceless and to platform the unplatformed, what we were doing wasn't that. We were sort of exploring the lore as it exists, the story as it is told by the sort of the storytellers who have recorded the history. And it felt like we were just sort of participating in something that already existed. And it felt like we were participating in something very human and very straight and very like recorded history. And so we sort of had to pivot. When we're making the show, we sort of had to pivot into like, okay, well, let's kind of do it a different way then, because I don't know if this is the ghost show that I want to make. I don't know if this is the spooky show that I want to do. Is, you know, I don't want to just do another show where we talk to the same, you know, the same sorts of things that everyone's talking to. And so we really dug deep into like, let's talk to some people. Let's talk to some local people here in Tennessee who are queer and trans and people of color who practice magic, who read tarot, who do spells, and sort of let's try to get a handle on queer Southern magic and just kind of see what that looks like. And as the more we did that, the more we found ourselves getting into nature and just sort of, you know, still doing the Estes, still doing tarot, things like that, but really, really looking for signs and synchronicities and things that would sort of present themselves to us that we could follow. And I think that felt a lot more genuine to me. That felt a lot more like, it felt less like scrambling around with flashlights in the dark and more like finding breadcrumbs to follow that are leading us towards, you know, who knows what. So I would say, you know, the general attitude of the show, and this will be true moving forward in other episodes too, is that, you know, I'm not trying to find a house with doors that slam. I mean, that'd be cool. I would love to find a house with doors that slam shut on their own, for sure. But I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to set up a bunch of nanny cams and say like, all right, we're going to sit and then we're going to do an exorcism. I don't intend, and you know, I'm sure I could be proven wrong. I do not believe that we will bring in a priest to do an exorcism at any point on this show moving forward. You know, I think our general methodology and our general sort of idea behind discovering that methodology is like, let's just kind of try stuff. Let's see what happens. Let's see what people tell us. Let's, you know, not again, spoilers, but let's get an oracle reading from someone we interview that sets us down a incredible path of synchronicities leading to a magic spell that leads us to encountering some really, really scary wildlife that acts in a way that wildlife doesn't act, and see where that takes us. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? I don't know if that's an answer to the question.
No, it does. I think it does make sense. And there's something beautiful about using something that's like a tool, Because yeah. I would argue that, you know, whether it's the Estes method or dowsing rods or tarot cards or spirit boxes, any of that stuff, these are tools. These are communication devices, you know, ways to try to communicate. Using in finding new ways to use things that aren't even that old, especially when it comes to the Estes. And that does get me a little pickled up when, you know, it's like, you know, they really, you know, they really had something interesting. And, you know, especially that Hellier crew did something to the paranormal world that the paranormal world wasn't necessarily, I guess, ready for. And so much of it can be attributed to Carl's brilliance with editing and filmmaking. And, you know, which I think is the underpin of all of that, of the success of Hellier. It's just so beautiful and easy to watch. And the music is also, the person they have doing the original music is incredible. So it's finding new ways to do the big work, which is opening up the line of communication to the magic of the universe that we live in, and trying to get closer to the source of what it is we're even doing here or what we are. And to me, that's the really exciting part. And now, will people find it entertaining to watch on television on a Thursday night at 9:30 some of the stuff that I think you and I want to be showing? That's for them to decide, right? And that's for executives to decide, because there's not enough doors slamming in this 30-minute episode, or screaming, or what the fuck was that? You know, there's not enough of that happening to sell soap and food and beer or whatever during the commercial breaks. But at the end of the day, I think this is the important stuff. And I don't want to sound too, you know, I've also been accused of having hubris. But at the end of the day, I don't want to make it sound too like self-important, but I do think it is important to try to put this out there. And specifically from your point of view, you know, you can do something that I could never do, just by nature of your life experience and who you are and who I am. And it doesn't mean it's better or worse, or it's just different. It's just different. And I think that's what's so cool about this, is the idea that more and more people can see, can hear, can experience something familiar to them, right? Which I think is one of the huge things about feeling included and feeling part of the whole team that we all are as people, right? And, you know, it's very easy for me to want to be a stand-up comedian when I was a kid, because I saw a lot of guys that looked like my family, or what I thought I would look like when I grew up. And I was like, oh, I can do that. And you hear all these great stories about, you know, kids nowadays being like, oh, I saw someone who looked like me on television doing this, and I thought I could do this. And it is very important. And it's no different when it comes to the paranormal.
I just read a book, and it's got a slur in the title, so I'm not going to, even if it's my slur to say, I'm not going to say it out loud. But it's called The F Words and Their Friends in Between Revolutions. And it's the F word that's not fuck, it's the slur one. But it's a really radical and magical book that sort of, it's framed like a fairy tale, sort of. It's framed like a fairy tale. There's actually there's a passage in it, and it's about the F words and the fairies getting together and dancing. And I found that very meaningful, just in my whole study, you know, thinking as a queer person who's talking about the fae and fairies and stuff. But one of the thing that sort of brought this up to me, which, by the way, highly recommend the book. There's a newish edition that just got printed that has a really powerful foreword that talks about the author and the sort of the queer commune that the author was participating in this place called Lavender Hill that was like right outside of Ithaca, New York, that was just like really beautiful and incredible. And this was in the '70s, and they were playing around with neo pronouns. So not using he or she for anyone, using different pronouns that they had invented, playing around with using MX instead of Mr. or Miss. I know people are like, oh, MX, that's new. It's like, no, these people in the '70s were playing around with it, which is very cool to me. But all that said, the book is about how it sort of classifies people. There's the men and there's the women, and then there's the group that is called the F words, but it's the F words and their friends. And so it makes it very clear that nobody, just by virtue of being straight or by virtue of being queer, is good or bad or anything. Because, you know, it's the queer people, but it's also their friends who are you know, straight people or people who aren't sure or anyone who want to believe in a more radical existence, who want to believe in a magical world. And I think that's really important, that when you were talking about, you know, like you and I have different experiences. And I think that's, you know, it's so important to think about. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, queer experience and queer experience with the paranormal, but I, you know, it's really important to me to say that, like, that doesn't mean that it's like, oh, this is just out. You know what I mean? Like, it's no. Not, it's everybody's, it's the friends, you know, everyone, you know, when I said before that I think community is the only thing that can save us, I really meant that. And community is made of individuals binding themselves together into something bigger and stronger and more powerful. And I think, you know, a lot of times the word community gets used in, I think a lot of times the word community gets used sort of in the same place where what people really mean is demographic. And I don't like that. You know, I think about like the trans community is something people say a lot. And it's like, I don't think that I'm in the same community as Caitlyn Jenner. You know, I think that Caitlyn Jenner, by virtue of class and race, is in a very different community than I am. I don't think people will say like the Asian community. I don't think that I'm in the same community as Andrew Yang, because again, class and political alignment, I think that we are in different communities. And so when I think about community, I'm thinking about individual relationships that are connected to other individual relationships that connect, that build into something really meaningful. All of that to say that, you know, this idea of queer people and their friends, that's, you know, that's sort of, that's allyship, right? Like that is, I think people misuse allyship a lot too. I think allyship is a word that people are often like, yes, I'm an ally. I personally wouldn't do a hate crime. And it's like, that's great. That's not the bar for it.
the absence of doing something does not make you.
Yeah. But I, you know, I think that you know, I think that there's it's easy for some people to say like, I want a diverse group of voices, and that means only people who aren't white. And I think that there are, you know, or people who aren't straight. And while I think that, you know, the representation is crucial, and I love to see lots of voices pop up that are not the voices I've seen on television. You know, I would love to see a ghost hunting show that's not, you know, for members of a, you know, trapped cover band. But I also think, you know, I'm thinking about every time you've talked to me about the stuff that you're investigating or things you're looking into, it's always like, yeah, that's fucking interesting, that's cool, you know. I think the friends part of the F words and friends is very important too, is the roundabout. I get on these tangents, and I just start talking about one thing, and it leads me
well,
to
that's
a bunch of stuff.
Thank God we're doing a podcast. I, you know, it is. And at the end of the day too, I think something that is important to remember, and, you know, for everybody, is, you know, there are these big, cause I always love the deep end, and I love the shallow end of the pool. I love the whole pool.
Totally.
Right.
Yep.
And so when it comes to the paranormal, you know, we're really in the deep end over here. And it's important to go into the deep end every once in a while, because then you remember, like, oh, I don't have my footing. And so it's important for me. And I think it's important for everybody to go into the deep end. But at the same time, I love being over in the shallow end, because that's where, you know, you can shoot hoops or do everything and just splash around and have some fun. And the paranormal and investigating the paranormal should also be splashing around and, you know, and having fun, or, you know, why are we doing it?
Absolutely. I am trying to live a life that is fun, and it's, you know, that doesn't mean not focusing on some of the important stuff. I focus on a lot of important stuff. That's why my back hurts all the time. But if I'm going to do anything, I want it to be fun. You know, I think I'm trying to, I keep saying this, I'm trying to, you know, I'm 32. I'm going to be 33 in 16 days. That's fun.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to be 33 in 16 days. And at this point, I, you know, I spent 10 years touring, doing stand-up comedy. And I'm at a point with that where I love performing. I love performing the stand-up. I love, you know, I love doing shows. It's great. But in terms of, like, a comedy career, in terms of, like, working clubs and trying to get on TV, that is a thing that has become less and less important to me the more I've gone on. And it's both a combination. It's mostly just the sort of the culture of what that means. And I see the people who are working really hard to do that. And I see sort of what sorts of personal and moral sacrifices that often requires. And I will perform for, you know, until I can't, you know, I will perform at probably conventions and different things, but I'm, you know, I'm not working as, like, I'm not trying to be a club comic anymore. Because it's not being fun. And I think I want to do things that are fun. I want to make cool art with my weird friends. And that's just sort of, that's my big goal right now. You know, it's just make cool art with my weird friends. And I want to do that because it's fun. So I'm very with you on that.
Yeah. I mean, that is a, you know, in both ways, I mean, this word is a radical and a radical way to live one's life, is to, you know, make these choices for ourselves, regardless of, you know, the preconceived notions that maybe we thought about. Oh, yeah. But what will people think if I stop doing this? I mean, because I you know, when you talk about stand-up comedy specifically, it's, you know, my career is in a much different place than I thought it would be 20 years ago when I was doing open mics. But I agree with you. You know, I think what we see now as, like, the dominant, like, popular thing in stand-up, I think is much different than it was 10 years ago. And
totally.
It used to be very, like, 10 years ago when I first got to Los Angeles, it was very kind of alt-centric, was getting a lot of the attention. Now I feel like the pendulum has swung to the opposite end of that. And, you know, hopefully it'll swing into the weird, not swing back, but swing in a different direction to the weird, which I think it will at some point. But when it comes to the paranormal as well, you know, it does have to be fun. But I think part of the fun, and I think, well, a large part of the fun for me is the bigger thing that adds meaning to the fun. And that's why it's so fun. Because I think fun is kind of a restrictive word in this way. I mean, it's like, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Which is excitement and excited enjoyment, right? And for me, that's what I feel when you're talking about the breadcrumbs that are leading you down a path you were not expecting. And it's those moments, and it's the work that goes into even being able to discover those breadcrumbs after the fact, where you didn't realize was a breadcrumb when it happened.
Absolutely. And that's some of the most fun ones, where you're like,
yeah.
oh, that's been from the start. This has been piling up. This thing has been building itself into a tower behind me. And I turn around and I'm like, okay, I see now.
Yeah.
I see what this is.
Yeah. I mean, like this whole idea, I mean, I've never been more convinced in my life that there is no such thing as linear time in the paranormal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think like, oh, I just started this investigation on Post Down. Little did I know it started 2 years before and I didn't even realize it.
Yep.
Because of things that have happened.
Did I tell you? Have I told you? I've told you about the calls that I've been getting for like 7 years of my life.
Well, do you want to lay it on everybody right now? I think we should real quick. We'll end it with this because I would like to be reminded of this though.
So for, I'm going to say 7-8 years, I have been getting wrong number calls for one name specifically. The calls are always from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I've been getting calls and I was just like, all right, there's just like some old dude who has a similar phone number to mine who puts the number down. And this is like before, this is back when I was like, oh yeah, paranormal stuff is cool, but I don't really know anything about it. You know, I hadn't done research. I hadn't looked into things even a fraction that I have now. And I'm getting these calls for a name, and that name is Robert Graves. And I don't think too much of it. I think I Googled it and I couldn't find anything. And I'm not thinking too much about it. It just happens. It happens. I get them like a couple of times a week. And, but it's nothing, you know, something like that happens. And eventually when it happens enough, you just sort of, you drown it out. It just becomes like white noise. Basically, I'm talking to a friend of mine who is a practitioner who like leads a coven of, you know, one of the mystery cults, and they're recommending me comic books. Now, we're not even talking paranormal stuff. I'm just talking about gods that I like. And they're like, oh yeah, you got to check out The Wicked plus The Divine. Like, it's really fun. It's about gods and stuff. And I'm like, great, let me check it out. And I get this book and I start looking into it. And someone in the book, I think the second trade is like, oh, something, something. I was there. I wrote the, I inspired the White Witch. And someone's like, the White Witch, you mean Robert Graves? And I have this like glass shatters moment of like, what the fuck? Are you fuck? No, come on. Come on. And I reach out to that friend and I'm like, hey, do you know this name? And they're like, well, yeah, I wouldn't be much of a neo-pagan if I didn't. And that sends me down this rabbit hole. And I find out that Robert Graves is the name of a dude who was like so deeply tied to everything that is like organized neo-paganism now, like a cornerstone of the shit. And it's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me to connect this person who I know through magic stuff, through witch stuff, is now connecting to this wrong number call that I've been getting literally at points every day, but usually like, you know, 2 or 3 times a week for like 7 or 8 years. And then some, this one, I will save the specifics, but it then connected to a very specific part of the show, and the cinematographer I worked with started getting synchronicities, and that tied us to a location, a whole big thing. That said, that's one where like, as you know, you talked to me 2 years ago and I'm like, oh yeah, Robert Graves, that's that number that I always get. Like, that's just some dude. And now it's like, all right, well, yeah, it is just some dude, but it has all of these ties to, you know, magic, the foundation of neo-paganism today. And that's fucking bananas.
It is really bananas because they're calling looking for Robert Graves.
Yeah, which leads you.
And which leads you to finding Robert Graves in a way that is so synchronistic. It just and that whole this, because to me it's so profound because it starts so long before.
Yeah.
Which just amps up the intensity in a way that is one of those wow, exciting, holy, and sure. Other people who are skeptic could come in and be like, That is just such a coincidence. And yeah. It's like, fine, you go live that boring life with your telescope posters on your wall. Daydream about your favorite number, which, by the way, numbers are magical, and I love numbers. I'm not trying to shit on people who love numbers, but I think we
and
get the point.
And, you know, telescopes, microscopes, also magical.
Yeah, also.
But yeah.
But we get it. We It's like, come on, really? Yeah. Like, that is a really awesome, really cool thing. And I think, obviously, once this is a thing that people can consume in any way possible, we will be alerting people here on the show about.
Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna once the stuff is out, and also, like, you know, once the stuff is out, I'll go into all of the details that are bananas happily, you know, with you on this podcast. I'm saving a little bit for when the thing is released, because I think people are gonna. I will say. I will say, you know, one of the coolest parts to me about when I first consumed, you know, a piece of media like Hellier, when I watched Hellier, all of the little synchronicities that connected to my life in a weird specific way, whether it was, you know, a video game randomly generating a town, picking Pikeville, Kentucky, whether it is me having a tattoo of a little tin can on my body that I got before I even knew Hellier was anything. I think I got it like 7 or 8 years ago, maybe six years ago. And but this is a tattoo that was a David Bowie reference because of Space Oddity, thinking about being lost in space and space travel and all this stuff. Anyway, so all the little synchronicities. And one of the things for me that I think is the most exciting as I get my show edited, as it gets closer to being something people can watch, is I am so deeply, deeply excited for people to watch this thing that I made and have weird shit like that start happening for them, you know?
Yeah. That's the thing, where it's contagious.
Yeah.
It is really contagious in a really, really fun way. As long as you're, I mean, if you're open to it, for sure. And, well, this has been a treat. Let's let everybody know where they can get all things Dash.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter mostly at Dash Kwiatkowski. I've been unfollowed twice today for being celebratory about the poor health of the Queen of England. So get in while it's hot. If she holds out 3 days to die, she will die on 9/11, which is the funniest possible thing. So that's fingers crossed. I'm on Twitter, Dash Kwiatkowski. I have a psychic, sort of a tongue-in-cheek psychic advice podcast called Psychic Friends. The Friends is spelled with a Z at the end, where me and my friend Rosa give psychic advice to the people on Facebook and Facebook groups where they are requesting free psychic advice. And yeah, I think that's sort of those are the big ones.
Awesome. Well, this has been great. This has been fun, enjoyable as always. So thanks for being here. And if I can get this paranormal storytelling show that is not stand-up comedy, off the ground, I don't know if I'll have enough time to actually book the proper tour. But you and I have already discussed, you know, trying to, you know, do this show together. I think it would be really fun to have you on the show as well. So, you know, obviously I'll be letting people know about that when that comes together, whether it's before the end of this year or not is the question, but definitely something that's happening in the near future. So looking forward to that.
You let me know. I'm 100% on board. I'm so excited. I'm excited both to do fun, travel sort of storytelling and comedy and stuff with you, but also just excited to hang out.
Yeah.
It's
been too long.
Hanging out with you. It's been a real long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So
thank you. Oh, I was going to say, thanks for having me on the show. I had so much fun.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And love you. Great chat. And we'll do it again soon.
Love you too, bud. Yeah, this was great.